Welcome to our episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Never would have thought would have seen the day that Rita Repulsa of Power Rangers would be in Fire Emblem Heroes. Never thought I'd see the day. What kind of timeline are we living in?
fun fact, he's talking about Barbara Goodson, who was Rita Repulsa in one of the seasons of the original Power Rangers show, Leo Season 3. And I got to meet her one time at a Comic-Con. They actually had Rita, Zed, and Goldar there. It was a terrible con, but they were amazing. And years later, a friend of mine named Kenny, he was dining with her for whatever reason. I think it was a con thing. And I'm talking with him randomly, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, well, guess who I'm dining with?" He goes, "You know who? I don't know." And he goes, "Oh, it's the Rita Repulsa lady, Barbara Goodson." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I think I met her once upon a time." And I checked my photos, and I sent him one. And so he sends her the photo, and she goes, "Oh, I remember him. He had a great head of hair." And I'm like, yep. And so my credibility is sustained, and that's why I'm the host. Moving on. Also here is Tellius Tyler, who has not met Rita Repulsa.
I just want to thank our listener, Alex, for making a comment about taking a drink every time Todd says that, because it's going to be a long episode for me and Will.
Alex, I was going to save this for the end, but Tyler decided to spoil it, so fine. So, Alex, you getting drunk tonight. And I have that power because I'm the host. So, tonight we have, honestly, a little bit of a lighter show because Nintendo's really, like, not talking. And like worse than the micro direct non-talking. We still haven't recovered from that, but we're gonna do our best to entertain you during the show. So let's get started off with, what have you been playing? And since I am the host, I am going to indulge and go first for a very basic and simple reason. I haven't been playing much. I was supposed to be well into my Silver Snow run by now. Like last week, I talked about how I made the time jump and everything, and I was doing well, and then I just got slammed with work, and every time I tried to play, like, something else would come up, and it sucks, but, you know, that's what happens when you're supposed to be an adult. But, I'm doing that, but the bigger thing was Fire Emblem Heroes. We had a new banner today with a new mythic hero, and so I tried to summon him, and the other character I wanted to get was Thrasir, who I had not had gotten yet. And so I'm going after every green I see, and the first green I get, free summon, 5-star Thrasir. And I'm like, boom. And like the fool that I was, I said, oh, let's keep going. I can make this work. So like 85 orbs later, I get a 5-star Emperor Edelgard, who I already had, and I'm like, screw this. Yeah, I do this like every time. Every time! At least the last couple of mythic banners, and I either don't get who I want, I only get copies, or I get someone else that I want, and I think this is a sign from Mario and Jesus, and I keep going, and then now I'm back down to 200 orbs, so I'm like, thank you. So also, how do you summon 3 ravens within like 6 draws of each other? That doesn't seem statistically possible. Just like that time I got 2 Ogmas back to back. The Todd remembers. So
yeah, it's definitely kind of that hook, unfortunately. Like, I guess while I'm on the topic, yeah, I kind of had the same thing myself. I only managed to get Ilya at the first summon session, and afterwards it's just Roy and an Edelgard after roughly about 100 orbs on my side as well. But yeah, once you hit that mythic banner, especially with that 8%, that draw rate, that appealing rate of 8%. Yeah, like, you can't help but actually just, like, want to maybe just hit more. But you also gotta know, again, like poker, you gotta know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And, like, it's just, especially since we still are waiting for that Choose Your Legends banner, which, by rumor, it is supposedly sometime in August. That is the current rumor right now. So if anyone has orbs right now, definitely do save them, because we're expecting, hopefully sometime soon, it's the Choose Your Legend banner is coming up in next month. But if you want to go try to pull hell now or try to get Rita Repulsa in your group, I mean, I got Leaf and Thrasia right now, so I really do want to get hell. But yeah, it's, do I want her? Do I want hell? Or do I want the Choose Your Legends banner when it comes out, whenever, hopefully next month? So it's that hook, it's that gacha mechanic.
Yeah, And this is a phrase I never thought I would get to say. Hey, do you want to go see Rita Repulsa and Fire Emblem Heroes? Go to hell.
Yep. That is true. That is true.
Oh,
I still can't believe that they actually managed to get Barbara Goodson to voice Hell. I mean, like, I know when she first came in book three, like, we didn't know who the voice actor was. I believe it was question mark when he showed her.
Maybe.
So to finally get confirmation who was she, and I was like, who would have thought? Rita Repulsa.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, in the objective sense, you know, they've gotten a lot of really great voice actors, not just, obviously, the ones who've done it for Fire Emblem, like the Three Houses crew, but, you know, they got Ray Chase, who's, you know, best known for Fire Emblem 15. And
Fire Emblem 15?
Sorry, Final Fantasy 15. I'm tired. All right, I'm allowed to make mistakes. I'm the host. But, you know, it's been a long day. But yes, Final Fantasy 15 with Ray Chase, and they've gotten a whole bunch of other ones. And so with Barbara Goodson, you know, who knows who else they're going to get. It's exciting. So, but yeah, but my gaming experience has been limited this week. Hopefully next week will be better. It probably won't be. But I'm slowly trudging through, and I might be getting a review code for Samurai Jack Battle Through Time, which I will find a way to play. I don't care if I have to do it at like 1 a.m. to get 30 minutes in. I will, if I get that game, especially in review code, I will play the heck out of that one because I really want that game.
Nice. Like, from what I've seen from previews, the Samurai Jack game is looking to be a very good fantasy game, especially, yeah. So, from the actors to, from what I've seen, like, a basic good platformer hack and slash, so should be good for fans of the show. So, here's hoping.
Right.
I guess I'll go next. And sadly, for most, I'm kind of in the same boat myself. Rick has been kind of in public about me. I was also, even with my week, I've also been trying to help with the site, which I have managed to go and write a few articles, so thankfully. But if there's any games that I've actually been playing, I mean, aside from Fire Emblem Heroes, trying to look for hell, is I actually have gone back to Nioh 2, and because today, by the time of recording, the newest DLC has come out called the Tengu's Disciple, basically retelling of one of the more famous heroes of Japanese folklore, which is Minamoto Yoshitsune, which if you know the name of Yoshitsune, then you pretty much know your Japanese lore. So I'm just briefly touched upon this. They also added new weapons, new yokais, just the setting of it all. Like, it's good to be back into the world of Nioh 2. I mean, of course, with the whole craze of Ghost of Tsushima that's happening right now, it's on the world. It's really good to go back to another Japanese samurai game of yokais and all that. So just continue on the ride of the whole Japanese samurai and ninjas and all that. So that's what I'm currently, hopefully this coming weekend I'll be tackling that DLC. But overall from that, it has been generally kind of weak, kind of a slow as well. I mean, for me, I've just continued with my Ring Fit Adventure currently right now. Almost done with the world of Sparta. Yeah, almost done with the land of Sparta in World 3. And I'm just curious, because like, when was the last time you actually went back to Ring Fit?
Ring Fit, I believe, on Monday.
Because I believe I did remember I sent you a little the gift.
Oh yes,
the Ring Fit meter.
I got a gift from you. That was sweet. Yeah, did I ever send a gift back though? I thought I couldn't figure it out.
You can. Again, you just have to, like, when you're not playing Ring Fit, you just have to press on the ring, just do whatever you want, do squeezes, pulls up, and then, like, it keeps mark of the squeezes, the pulls you do. So once you head
really?
To go to Ring Fit, just go to and send it to which profile that you want to. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I forgot to talk to you about that. That was cool.
So yeah, it's just basically an encouragement for Ring Fit. So yeah, better get those games, Tyler. I know
we're
in lockdown, but still, better get those games.
Yeah, I hurt my leg run the other night, and like my legs just break down really fast. And I've gone for a jog like 3 times in a week, and when I got that final one, I was like in just incredible pain. So this week I haven't done Ring Fit as much as I would like to. Too much to run, but I really Ring Fit is great. It's a real workout, man.
I agree. So much. Actually, funny enough, as well, was like coming back from home from work, I saw like in someone's trash pile, they actually brought a Switch and a Ring Fit as well, Ring Fit box. So I've been seeing like a lot more people actually buying this thing since a lot of other retailers have been gaining supply now. So I think the Ring Fit shortage is safely over, for what I can tell.
Yeah, it seems that way. Finally got their copies of it, so it'll be interesting when they release the final sales numbers for that game, because it's done extraordinarily well. It definitely is. It's leagues better than Wii Fit, which was much. It felt more like a gimmick than anything. This is a legitimate.
The Wii Fit, remember, was just a board. It was supposed to be kind of a minimalist way of training, and then like seeing how your body core and weight was, and even they admitted that wasn't exactly an exact science. Like, remember when Reggie got in that thing and they thought it was he was like super heavy, and they're like, oh, like bad call of technology.
Wii Fit was unfortunately focused on balance. It wasn't really as active, it's just really more balance focused. So
yeah, but it was more yoga and
yeah,
stretching. It's
but yeah, I'm
that curious. I mean, it's just Ring Fit is much more of an actual workout. One day when I was doing the exercise where you put the ring in like front of you horizontally, and at night I was laying there like, wow, my chest is like hurting. I didn't know what it was, and I realized, oh my gosh, it's because I did like 550 of those ring squeezes that my chest is so sore.
So yeah, overall we can't stop recommending Ring Fit. Definitely, if you have a chance to, definitely buy Ring Fit. If you have a Switch, they're all recommended.
All right, Tyler,
I've been playing a lot actually. Months of quarantine, I played an embarrassingly little amount of video games, and this past month I've really made amends there. I finished Paper Mario the Origami King, so I'm going to discuss that for a little while, because I think this game was just, it's so past my expectations. I think it's my third favorite Paper Mario game under, of course, 64 and Thousand Year Door. It's not on that level, but it was just such a out of nowhere game on so many levels. I mean, just the entire mood surrounding the game was unique. The darkness that was found in that first teaser with Peach walking out of the room and asking Mario if he wanted to be folded, you definitely find that throughout the game. And I may have liked to see Nintendo lean into that even more. I see why they didn't, because at the end of the day, this is a game for everyone. It's not really supposed to be a moments in here that will shock you. I won't go too far into spoilers, but I'll talk about a little bit of that in a minute here. The story was interesting because the characters are phenomenal. You meet this Bob named Bobby, and Bobby the Bob Man, let me tell you, he's awesome. He's one of the best character partners in Paper Mario, hands down. And Olivia, your traveling companion, is similar. She's just such a ray of sunshine, and you do establish an emotional connection with them in a way that you didn't with Huey in the previous two games. How much of it is the dialogue, or how much of it is the fact that this game is sort of tinkering with the idea of story? Because there's definitely a through plot line that those games didn't have. Again, it's not as strong as I would like it to be. I went back to that full story mode. But it's still, this is definitely a step in the right direction in that department. Where the game shines the most is in its environments and its various gameplay styles. Tanabe had said in the interview that we ripped apart that you'll see a lot of gameplay styles that they packed into this game. And in an interview that was otherwise just like incredibly disappointing, and we'll have a follow-up story to that in the news segment, he was dead 100% right about this, because the the settings that you'll find each kind of challenge you in different ways. There's a segment of the game that's just like straight Wind Waker. Like it is The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. And it's amazing. It fits right in. You really don't feel like you're playing another game. It's not disjointed at all. But you're traveling on the open sea. You're consulting your sea chart. You're pulling up treasure beneath the ocean. Segment where you're traveling around in this like shoe car, and that's your primary means of transportation. And it makes this big space smaller, but affects the size and scope of the world. The highlight is definitely Shogun Studios. Everybody says that, and I think that this is a case where the plurality is actually the second level. You go to this ninja-themed theme park, and you're basically, I don't want to spoil anything, but you get into all sorts of creative scenarios, culminating with a boss fight that is one of the most original. It's one of the best and most original in the series. They show this in the promotional material, so I guess I'll touch on it a little bit. But like on a stage, and like the boss is like just created this script to try to kill Mario off. But you're basically like doing this live performance. It's so much fun. Mario's personality in this game is at its peak. In every other Paper Mario game, and really every Mario game in general, he's a pretty blank slate. In this game, he has a personality. Like the way they animated him at times is, they took far more creative liberties instead of just keeping him as this kind of blank slate. There's a dance scene where Mario is really just like getting down, and it's cool to see this character in that light. But that area is phenomenal. There's a shady desert like kind of like like shady town run by snifts, and that one's another standout. It's just every place you go is fantastic, and that's part of what makes the game. So I do think the settings are right up there with the Thousand Year Door and the original in terms of activity and fun, and the scenarios that they packed into those are what elevate the game, in my opinion, from a solid game to a game that I think is great. The combat is definitely where things slow down, and I really liked it because I personally found a lot of satisfaction in solving puzzles. But there are cracks that, for me, were just cracks that I could see how they'd be fissures for other people. Solving the puzzle for me was its own reward, but I really, I didn't need experience points progressing. But I could see how people who don't enjoy puzzles would feel as though they're not really getting anything out of this. And ultimately, it goes back to the point that I had made about the theming of this game being dark, but not too dark. Like, Nintendo had a compromise, because ultimately this game is for everybody. And a lot of the puzzles are hard. Like, I'm not a great puzzle solver. But there were times where I'd have my roommates come out and help me figure out these puzzles, and we'd be staring at them for a couple of minutes just trying to piece it together. So I'm thinking if somebody's like 8 and they're playing this game, they're going to have a hard time solving every one of them happen, unless they're a PG. And that's where Nintendo kind of compromised on the enemy strength. We had mentioned at the Outer Haven, we reviewed, none of us reviewed the game, but Henry did, and he said that he never came close to dying in ordinary battles, and I had that same experience. That's because if you can't solve the puzzles, Nintendo doesn't want you to die. Like, it would be too hard. It wouldn't be an experience if that was the case. So it's frustrating, and I would have liked for them to go with a more challenging angle. I would have liked maybe if there were difficulty options, that would have been a good way to kind of improve on the combat system. But that's kind of why it's there. And it's definitely true that, like, the item, I think I praised last week that, the items really do kind of mix up the combat. They really don't. Fire Flower is basically a stronger jump. The tail is the turkey leaf is basically a stronger hammer. Like, ultimately, those moves don't really add much. And because they have durability, they break. And there's so much in the world, it's never really a problem. But it would be nicer if they, in my opinion, if they were just traditional up upgrades if they went for, like, instead of giving you flashy boots that break, if you could just find a pair of boots that upgrade your standard jump to that level, that would be better.
Or do, like, Thousand Year Door where it's badges and you have to pick and choose, you know, which ones you can wear and what abilities you get.
Right. Yeah, if I recall, in the game, like, yeah, they only like five badges per se in the game, last I checked. At least according to Yahtzee's review and the Escapist.
Yeah, so I won't describe any of them as badges. There are accessories that you can buy, but they are kind of fall in the same family. So there's, like, one that gives you a slight HP boost, one that gives you a decent HP boost, and one that gives you a large HP boost. And if game, you can buy those better accessories. And there's just, like, no benefit to not equipping them, like, unless you just really want to make it hard on yourself. But say there's, like, a toad belt. I know the lost toads, and I just can't imagine playing the game without that on. It's so much nicer to be able to say, okay, I know there's something near here, rather than just hammering every wall. And there's a lot of toads that are really well hidden. I'm starting to crack. My bad. The combat's pretty strong. Let's see. Oh, and the boss battles are the best. The boss battles are much all fantastic. The Legion of Stationery, while I'm not crazy about their character design, they actually, by the end of the game, I was kind of into it. The battles are intense. Like, the music sets this perfect tone. You're just like, it's hard not to get this adrenaline rush facing this pair of scissors that if it cuts you, you get a game over. It's one shot KO. You have to dodge the scissors attack or you. And it certainly adds to that overall kind of horror into the game. And if you get cut by scissors, fortunately, I did not. Mario gets cut in half. It's pretty. But that overall kind of intensity that each boss battle brings, I think the boss battles in this are the. Period. Like, they are very creative. Some of them are. There's occasions where you're like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do here, and I wish guidance. But I don't think I ever lost to boss. They were pretty easy to resolve at the end of the day. So overall, Kirby Origami King it's a great game. I really can't recommend it highly enough. I would probably give it a 4 out of 5 given the flaw that I think are inherent in the system. This is a game that you really have to kind of experience. I'm going to talk about spoilers for like a minute and a half here. So, you know, just skip ahead if you don't want to hear it. But the biggest problem in the game to me was one's motivations. So you're going through this King Ollie's castle, right? The music is the best. It's like, it might be one of the best video game songs, period. It is so epic and so demented. It creates this perfect picture. And you get to the top of the tower, and Ollie's going to tell you his motivation. It's because a toad wrote on him, and he felt like that defamed him, and that's why he wants to destroy the world and make it all over. That was such a, just like, because they really, there's a story here that actually is. And the characters are phenomenal, and then they just undercut the whole thing with that. And reading some of the interviews, you can tell they just don't want to do that. But what for whatever reason, the Nintendo higher ups are making them go that way. Undercut a lot of the darkness in the game. Overall, I think when you play the game, you'll know what I mean. There are a few. There's this fork in the road where you have to choose which path to go on. That is, if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. What happens if you get the wrong path? It's just like super dark. It's crazy that it's in a Nintendo game. And to me, it was a real pleasant surprise. So,
all right, that's very interesting thoughts on Paper Mario, which is perfect because we got more to talk about in the news. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. Yeah, and now we can talk about something that we can all agree on, and that is that while there are positive elements to Paper Mario the Origami King, there is something that is still universally bad, and that is the lack of partners and NPCs with personality and feeling. Now, we're not talking about dialogue, because as Tyler noted about Bobby the Bob-omb, you know, he had plenty of personality to spare. But in a recent expanded interview, producer Tanabe noted that since Sticker Star, they have not been able to modify any NPCs to look differently than their standard forms, including Toads. They can't even use Toadette anymore, who, if you recall, was in Paper Mario previously. And that's just incredibly frustrating, not just because this is basically a directive from Miyamoto, apparently, but it just robs the personality of the games. Why would we want to just deal with standard Toads and Bob-ombs and Koopa Troopas and all of them, or comics? I mean, that comic character is just literally a comic. That's it. You know, give us some personality. Give us some flair. Give us some Paracarry and Admiral Bobbery and all of them. Why is that so wrong? It boggles the mind.
Yeah, this was a frustrating clarification because it's clear that Tanabe doesn't want to make the games that way. You know, and it seemed as though the question has always been, who is responsible for this? And with Sticker Star, everybody pointed the finger at Miyamoto because he famously told them, you know, this is too similar to the other games, you know, change it up and do things differently. But then people started to shift the blame towards Tanabe. And in that original interview before release, he had said that no longer possible. And we were like, what does no longer possible mean? You just literally can't draw a different hairstyle on a Toad? But this kind of clarified that this is from the higher-ups at Nintendo. You cannot change character designs at all. You have to just use Toads. It's never been a stupider rule ever. I don't understand. People are saying, oh, it's branding. How is that good branding? Like, especially in this, the year 2020, with social media, is to have quirky, unique characters that people fall in love with. It's not hard to imagine them coming up with a design for a Toad that goes viral. And people think, oh, that's a meme now. Love that. I'm going to check out this game. It's just such a backwards way of thinking. Just seems to go against marketing 101.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's like, that's kind of the thing that we all enjoy about Thousand Year Door and other, even the first Paper Mario, that heck, even from color schemes into accessories, like, I don't know, like with even with Captain Toad, a headlamp, bag, all that, there's these like minor detail and alterations of different Toad designs. And like, I don't know, have a pirate Toad, a space Toad, all these kind of different variations of Toad. Yeah, that's kind of the thing that makes it stand out. It's just how, again, we know Captain Toad, we know Toadette, all these different Toads, like, because again, they stand apart and are unique to one another. So to hear Nintendo says no, you just gotta use plain old generic Toads, all red, all blues, with the same old design everywhere. It's like, okay, but then how can I differentiate them apart? Is it from this city, from that city? Like, yeah, like all just the same. So they're not very rememberable. So,
So hopefully with potential we don't know the sales numbers as present. We know that in the UK it had its best launch ever in regards to doing better than Sticker Star and Color Splash combined, which is literally saying nothing when Color Splash didn't even sell 200,000 units. But and then in Japan it had like the fourth biggest opening of the franchise at like barely over 100,000. So, and we haven't heard anything from the US obviously, so depending on how the sales go, it could be a turning point or it could not. You never know. And the fact that Nintendo is, you know, is basically strangleholding this game and restricting the greatness that it once had is sad, because I truly believe that if you took what the Origami King does do right in terms of like the unique origami aesthetic, which is perfectly Paper Mario, and the open-ish worlds, which is perfectly accentuating Paper Mario, you know, the secrets and everything, and then add, you know, the RPG battle system, throw in the partners, and a villain that's not mad that a Toad wrote on him, apparently, you'd have a much better game. But if Nintendo won't allow that, then that's on them. So
it's really strange because Mario Odyssey introduced 1,000 new characters. Like, yeah, why is the restriction on the Paper Mario spin-off? I get it. Like, Super Paper Mario was extremely different. Weird game, but it was a great game. Like, I don't understand. This is such a course correct, and for it to still be going on 8 years after the release of Stick, It just makes shit drop your hands. I just want to yell at somebody. It doesn't make any sense.
Moving on to something to yell about for another reason. G4 is coming back! Yes, the great gaming / nerd / geek television station announced on Twitter that they have never stopped playing and that they will be back in 2021. Now, how will they be back? That's a bit unclear at present. We don't know if there's going to be a TV station, if it's going to be like a straight-up YouTube show. It's unknown, but a lot of people are happy. A certain wrestler is actually trying to campaign to be a host. I'm going to be doing a similar campaign, but for a brand new show that I call Nerd Wars, so stay tuned for that. It's like Attack of the Show seems to be coming back. X-Play seems to be coming back. And who knows what else. And this is extremely exciting for me because this was the show and the station that made me feel comfortable with being a nerd. Because back in the early days, I was ridiculed my whole life, but I was ridiculed for being a nerd for liking these things. And this was before my diehardness with the internet and, having various communities like Outer Haven and all the other websites I work for, where it was fine that I loved all these shows and these cartoons and these video games. It made me feel cool. Because, these are regular people just like me who love this crap. And it's awesome. And they were going to E3. They were doing Comic-Con coverage. And so on and so forth. And it was just so much fun. And so if we can get this back in any true capacity, it is awesome. So I am very happy.
It's definitely kind of funny when I mentioned it, when you mentioned G4 back in the X-Play days. And now, a few days later, what? We was just recently talking about that. And now, lo and behold, G4 is apparently coming back. It's definitely kind of a nice thing to see, especially here in this current year of 2020. I still remember, of course, Adam Sessler, Olivia Munn, Morgan Webb, all these great stars. Yes, Kevin Piera, just all these great shows. I mean, I still remember back when I still had cable on Spike TV, and just seeing those guys. I mean, heck, I still remember the time when they first reviewed Suda 51 No More Heroes for the original Wii, and they gave it a 5 out of 5, which, wow, they gave a Suda 51 game a 5 out of 5. I'm like, dang, that is high praise coming from Adam. So I'm just really glad to see G4 is coming back, but I wonder because I know a lot of people have moved on, like Adam and Morgan, they have moved on to their own personal lives. But who knows who's gonna be over this next generation of G4? So I mean, it's definitely good to wonder what's gonna come next.
Yeah. Are you excited, Tyler?
This is one of the iconic gaming shows back in the day. The space is obviously crowded now, so you're going to have to come up with a way to stand out. I don't know how much the G4 brand means to young people. It's definitely cool.
Yeah. All right, so moving on, we have Animal Crossing. So a new feature is about to come out. A new update is about to come out for the game. And it's going to feature, the typical quality of life improvements. But there's also going to be a backup data service where you'll finally be able to save your island on a service that is not directly connected to your Nintendo Switch. Because if
about...
you recall... What?
I was about to say about bloody time.
Anyway, but... the reason this is important is because since the launch of the game, the only thing that you could save was your island on your Nintendo Switch. Not to your account, not to anything else, but to the system itself. And so if you were to somehow break your Nintendo Switch, you would lose your island and all the work that you had done. So fans have been asking for a long time for a backup data system, and now we're going to get it. Which shows that Nintendo was listening. Sometimes. I said it. So, but I know some people, including our dear Cromcho, who's going to be happy about that. And again, it's part of a free update. Now there are some things you'll have to do, including how to register it, and then should something happen to your Switch, how to get it back. But it seems to be a good system, and hopefully it makes some Animal Crossing people happy.
I believe that though they may have taken away the ability to visit random people's islands. I know in New Leaf you could just kind of visit wherever you wanted to. I think in this game you have to have actual code. I haven't played Animal Crossing. I don't know the exact details, but I do know that people want the ability to visit anyone's island. It's included in this, so hopefully they add that in a future update.
So let us know what you think of the update when you get it. Moving on to Will's favorite story that I still hate. Because I can say that I'm the host. Because it's Persona 5 Scramble. No, not Persona 5. Persona 5 Scramble. But yes, apparently a new financial report from Atlus is indicating that the game, which is currently out in Japan, is indeed going to be coming to the West. We do not have a release date or window, but it does say in their financial report coming to the West soon. So,
Just for correction's sake, it's not Atlus themselves. It's actually Koei Tecmo.
Koei, right. Because we can't bother Atlus with this, because that would mean they're actually going to give the fans what they deserve in an actual Persona 5 port. But no, let's have the Warriors-style game. Thank you, Atlus. Fake smile.
Again, we'll take what we can get, because again, technically, Persona 5 Scramble is the official sequel to the game. So for the time being right now, we'll just take the sequel, and who knows if the sales are... translates, perhaps we'll get the original in due time. I mean, after Shin Megami Tensei 3 and 5, so...
But that makes it even worse that it's like a sequel, because I found that out when I was writing about this for another website. Because it's like, oh, it's, you know, it's set 6 months after the first game. Well, what if you never played the first game? Like me and a whole bunch of people on Switch who don't have PS4s. Then it's like, oh yeah, I loosely know these characters. Oh, what are they talking about? I have no idea. Ooh, here's 1,000 enemies to kill. Really? At least with Warriors Dynasty, or sorry, Fire Emblem and Zelda, we had like a completely separate story that wasn't tied to anything else per se, you know, outside of like the referencing of the other worlds and, you know, the dimensions of the characters, which is fine. But this is like a direct sequel apparently. So how does that work? It doesn't.
Again, Atlus is kind of similar ways of Nintendo as well. Like sometimes they listen to you and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. It's like we want to hear what you fans want. We want Persona 5. Oh, you want a Dynasty Warriors version of Persona 5. That's perfect. That's not what we said! Monsters. Yeah. Let's just say when this game bombs, it's going to be something you see coming. Yeah. I went there. Okay, I don't know if the game's going to bomb. I really don't care either way, but... I know I won't be buying it. I know Will will buy it. So that's 2/3 of the podcast right there. I'm actually curious, Tyler, where do you fall? Would you get this game or you would not?
No, I wouldn't get this game.
There you go.
We win. Like you said, if you have the original, yes. But I might be more interested if we have the original.
Yeah. All right. So next up we have some rather scary news. Yeah, I still can't believe this. But apparently EA is hinting that they are close to buying WB Games, which, if you recall, is the home of Batman. So, among other things, obviously. But, you know, mainly Batman. That's what we're concerned about here. Because if EA gets a Batman game, yeah. No.
I fear for that possible future. It's like EA holding the WB license, and especially currently right now we have the Injustice games, of course. Mortal Kombat is also part of that as well, correct?
Technically, yeah. I mean, it's NetherRealm who develops it, but it's WB Games who publishes it.
Yeah. They also get that. Then again, I mean, even currently right now, Mortal Kombat has their also own personal loot box system and all that. So I have that with EA. I worry for that possible future again.
Yeah, I fear for us all. Speaking of which, Splinter Cell. That got some interesting news that cartoon anime kind of thing for Splinter Cell is being made by Kevin Smith. For Netflix. No, wait, that wasn't it. That was Green Hornet. But it's being made for Netflix, and fans are, like, not happy because they don't want a cartoon in the Splinter Cell universe. They want a freaking game in the Splinter Cell universe that they've been asking for years. Like, it's not even funny. This, like, this, of all the franchises, like, globally, Splinter Cell is one that is just asked for all the time, and it's not getting made for whatever reason. And it's Ubisoft, and Ubisoft is honestly very good about listening to their fan base at times. Look at Assassin's Creed, you know? What was that for? The fans said it was getting too convoluted, and it was getting too weighed down, so they took 2 years off, and then they had Origins, then they took another year, and then they had Odyssey.
They definitely have improved. I will give them that, like, especially with the whole after Syndicate with Origins and Odyssey. They definitely have been improving. Of course, with the next game of Valhalla, like, they are definitely slowly improving. But I do have to point out, like, again, even with like that, I agree that they're taking the Assassin's Creed to this new direction. At the same time, I'm just like a little bit iffy, if not cynical, of like, is this really the same Assassin's Creed? I'm sorry if I'm a little, like, if it's overly simple, but it's just, like, wait, like, how about how it is, and now, like, yeah, like, take that game from, compared to Assassin's Creed 2, like, I feel like that big jump is jarring in my opinion.
Either way, a lot of people are wanting Splinter Cell, but not in cartoon form, so it'll be very, and the backlash has already begun, like, it's already reached, like, various websites and everything, so. And I've never even played the games. I think I've seen people play it, but I never played it myself. But I know it's a beloved franchise, and, you know, they've done a lot of games with it. So the fact that they're just dragging their feet makes no sense.
So it's pretty much like the alternative to Metal Gear, and especially now with like Hideo Kojima's not with Konami anymore. That's kind of like the only thing if you wanted like a stealth game. Even though like the recent Splinter Cell games like a bit more action oriented, but they still kept some of the stealth mechanics here and there. But yeah, Splinter Cell is generally like a well liked the license. It's just I'm surprised like why they haven't done anything aside like putting Sam Fisher into like other mobile titles, which really is kind of questionable.
Yeah, and fans reacted to that too, and Ubisoft has done nothing. Wait, does this mean that like Splinter Cell is the Paper Mario of Ubisoft? I don't know. I had to go there. I had to. All right. For my next story, this is one I, the host, have been waiting for because it's something I honestly really don't like, and it's Pokemon. Now, I was like, wait a minute, Todd, don't you love Pokemon? I do, but I don't like a certain storyline that's apparently playing out in Pokemon Journeys. Now, as you know, Japan is much ahead of us in terms of the episodes released. They only have the first 12 episodes in America up on Netflix, which I reviewed for the site. But apparently, in the future episodes, Ash catches a certain Pokemon, I won't spoil who, and he decides to really work hard to train with his Pokemon. And apparently, Pikachu gets jealous of that, which leads to Ash and Pikachu having a big fight, and Pikachu runs away, ends up in Pallet Town, where Mama Ash decides to, you know, sing Pikachu to sleep. It's apparently adorable. And then Ash and Pikachu reunite, and then Ash sings to Pikachu to show that how much he cares. And I'm just like, you're telling me after 7 main journeys, all the side journeys, all the Pokemon he's caught, all the weird things that Ash and Pikachu have done, now they're having this fight? Really? That makes no sense. And they can't say, oh, Todd, he's never done this before, because he has. He's dedicated whole episodes to training a certain Pokemon more than Pikachu, and Pikachu's usually the one helping him do it. So, really? Pikachu, after all this time, knowing that he's definitely Ash's number one Pokemon, he gets jealous because he catches this one new Pokemon and starts training up with him more? That makes no sense! Ugh.
It's, again, we're going to, like, the Pokemon series after all these generations. Like, now you have a fallout between Ash and Pikachu after all these years. It's like, like, yeah, okay, like, you've been married for, like, 10 years, and then now you have a fight now. Like, really? You couldn't have a fight sooner?
Yeah. I mean, again, if this was, like, season one, yeah, sure. If this was Johto, you know, they're still relatively, you know, young in their adventures, because Ash never ages. You know, that's fine. But this is, you know, 7 journeys, plus all the side journeys, with all the Pokemon, and all the struggles, and all the other fights that him and Pikachu have gotten into, and all the, you know, connections that they've had to prove that they are, like, brothers. And, like, now they're fighting? Makes no sense. And, now, I'm not saying this is as bad as the time that Ash apparently forgot to bring other Pokemon to a gym fight. That was rock bottom, alright? I still can't believe they did it. That was such crap. But, like, this is close. Because we know they're going to make up. That's the literal bond of the show, is Ash and Pikachu. Ugh. Here, I know. I have an idea to solve all of this. Just hire me as head writer. I can solve this. It's like, and then Ash catches Mewtwo and captures every Pokemon in the world in 10 seconds. Just like Go. Moving on. Actually, have either of you watched Journeys yet?
I have not yet. Even with Other Side, I have not seen Netflix. I have not actually seen the YouTube clips on that's up of Journeys. I saw the whole Rapwood and Score Bunny kerfuffle, which everyone had back then.
That was dumb too.
In their defense, I know you can watch the original episodes, but a lot of the people may not have seen episodes with Pikachu and Ash having rifts just because of how long the show has been on for.
Yeah.
They're going to have to recycle plot lines eventually. That wasn't the case, but I could see how as a long-time viewer, it would be puzzling.
And I acknowledge that, and that is a good point, Tyler, that, you know, it has been a long time, and so that they might not have remembered that, you know, Ash almost gave up Pikachu to be with the Pikachu herd in Season 1, Episode 9. I'm kidding. That's not the episode, but it probably is close. But, like, still, you know that Ash and Pikachu are the core of the series, and so it rubs me wrong in a writing way, it rubs me wrong in a Pokemon fan way, as, like, really? Pikachu's getting jealous now? I mean, he wasn't jealous with, Poipole, who was clinging to Ash, he wasn't jealous of Chikorita, who was the literal jealous Pokemon, and, or Phanpy. Or, you know, all of them. Like, all these other Pokemon that Ash, like, clung to as much as Pikachu, and this is the one you overreact about? Really? Okay. Yeah. No. Speaking of frustration, Nintendo. Yeah, we're calling you out. I'm just kidding. Nintendo apparently has had some major leaks recently, and it's been covering a wide swath of games, including Pokemon Diamond and Pearl, where there were certain functions that were leaked. Super Mario 64, where Luigi apparently had a model in the game and was supposed to be in it, apparently. There was story leaks for certain games that were of things that were supposed to happen that would have been really advanced, but eventually got axed. And even apparently an Animal Crossing leak where there's going to be human NPC characters coming around, so.
Yeah, that's whole taught a Human Crossing, they said.
Oh, gosh. So, I mean, this has been going on for a while, you know? And it's, like, it's kind of sad that this just keeps happening.
Well, the actual, like, uncovering of files from Mario 64 is extremely cool from a gaming history perspective.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like finding the Holy Grail in a way, a model for Luigi in the game, it's not in the game, but it's in Nintendo's files. Like, Luigi was intended to be in the game at some point. That's pretty cool. I wonder in what capacity those original plans were, but it's always cool to see behind the scenes and just, for such an iconic game, it is odd that Luigi's not in it. I mean, Yoshi's in it. But, I do think this story is really, really cool. Watching people put the model together using the parts, and some of them are, like, kind of filling in some blanks because it's not perfect, and just kind of, and it lets you envision what it would be like if Luigi was in Mario 64. It's super cool. I know it's concerning for Nintendo that, you know, their information is being accessed and leaked out. But at this point, I don't know what advantage a competitor would have knowing that in 1994, Zelda 64 had a model of the castle that was then used as Ganon's castle. It's much more just from a gaming history perspective, fascinating to watch.
I guess I can appreciate that kind of perspective because, like, we're, like, imagine, like, I'm starting to imagine, like, what happens if they actually did add Mario, Luigi back to Mario 64 during that time period of 1994. Like, we're all so familiar with, like, Mario just being the main protagonist, and of course, Yoshi and everyone else. Even Princess Peach got some respect. So, but to the fact, know that Luigi was supposedly in Mario 64, like, how would he would have been in that game? How would you play the part of it? I mean, of course, with all the levels you see, the story of the entire game, like, how would he would fit in, and like, would have influenced anything else like the later titles, like what Luigi would be in Super Mario Sunshine? I don't know. It's definitely kind of raised that what if questions, like, what if this timeline had Luigi in Mario 64? It's nice thing to wonder about.
All right, let's see. Actually, that's it. So, our main event tonight is something that Tyler talked on a few weeks ago, and that was that Nintendo, when they revealed the Switch, and they focused on the Joy-Cons a lot, because those were obviously integral to the system. Since then, though, despite the promise of using the HD Rumble in a variety of unique features and ways, they honestly haven't done that. And that's kind of curious, given that, you know, we're in year, or already halfway through year four, more or less, and there hasn't really been anything like a 1-2 Switch outside of maybe Ring Fit Adventure and technically Labo. So, what could Nintendo do to kind of revitalize the Joy-Cons and bring them to the potential that they were teasing at the early outset of the system? We'll break this down in a Nintendo discussion. All right, Tyler, since this is your topic, I'll let you take point. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you gave a good intro there, because we've seen Nintendo, like, at first the Joy-Cons seemed like they were intended to be an upgrade over the Wii Remote with, you know, HD Rumble and the infrared sensing and all that good stuff. But they've really only used those features in a few ways, and some games have been more successful than others. I mean, Labo was not very successful. One Switch was not a great game. It didn't sell a lot. And then you have kind of more success stories with ARMS and Ring Fit Adventure. After playing Paper Mario, they do utilize the Joy-Cons in that kind of Wii way. It's, here's something that you can interact with on the screen, use this power-up, now use motion controls to grab this wall and tear it down. And I, of course, turn that off right away and just use the joystick instead. You kind of see stuff like that in a lot of Switch games. Breath of the Wild is similar in that way. But my question is, how would you guys like to see Nintendo utilize the cons? Because for a lot of people, I think they just prefer if Nintendo trashed the Joy-Cons entirely and just went with a traditional controller for their games. I know I personally will just not always choose stick controls versus motion controls. And you know, when you think about just how much money they could save manufacturing if they went with a simpler controller, a model with simpler controllers, there's definitely something to be said there. What do you guys think?
You go first, Will.
Like, is there something like having a terms like a simpler controller? Because, like, we already had great success with the original Wiimote back in the day, and again, this is just the next evolution of it. But I can only imagine, like, again, of their potential. I mean, sure, the HD Rumble feature, and of course, naturally, the games that utilize HD Rumble, some of them good, some of them bad. I mean, really depends on the developers themselves. So, but the way, like, you suggest on the idea of, like, something similar to, like, save Mandarin flashing calls, like, I don't know, like a smaller Joy-Con, I mean, or something that's, like, much more compact, but smaller, but much more, what's the word for it? Much more meatier, much more, like, focused on each Joy-Con, because even for, like, the basic Joy-Cons themselves, like, I still remember, again, how it can just simulate it, like, marbles in a jar, or just like the tactile features of it. It's definitely, I mean, again, sure, it's gimmicky, but it works. And like, to see of a possible, like, another form of it, it's kind of hard to imagine currently right now, because again, like, when I talked about this originally back a few podcasts with Keith, is just like, is there something else that can really make from the next form of Joy-Con? Like, I'm pretty sure Nintendo definitely has something that's like definitely out of left field they can continue to develop upon. But as of right now, I can only imagine what else, because right now Ring Fit has that whole heart sensor monitor, which they have incorporated. So what's next from there? That's one thing I wonder.
Let me ask you this. Say you're playing Breath of the Wild 2, right? And you get to a... You talk to some NPC, and they say... They give you, like, a box, and they say, can you tell me how many rupees are in this box? And you have to use the Joy-Con to, you know, figure out how many rupees are in there. Would that be something that you would think would enhance the game, or would that be something that you would take away from the game? Because there's a lot of cool things they could do with Joy-Cons, but I have a hard time thinking of, outside of Ring Fit, which is a major success in that way, and ARMS, I feel similar, in mainline Nintendo games, do we really want those? Are the Joy-Cons kind of superfluous in that way? Are these games just better experienced with a regular controller?
That's like, I think because when you mentioned Breath of the Wild, I'm immediately reminded regarding to like how, of course, the gyroscope, what they use with the Switch to like with that one few tempos, which many argue was like not really fun per se, and then there'll be like some tempos which like utilize like the Joy-Cons. If I recall correctly, I think I could be wrong, but like actually utilize Joy-Cons pretty well. So in the sense of like, I don't know, if they intend to like upgrade the use of Joy-Cons in Breath of the Wild 2, like for example, I don't know, heart monitor, or just like the whole locking system that's used in that one minigame in 1-2 Switch, I feel like they can definitely like bring up that level instead. Bring up that next level of use for the Joy-Cons, and instead of like not making it feel so gimmicky, like which a lot of people kind of like say that, like I just want to play the game. If it makes a fun, if it enhances the experiences, fine. But like, don't, it's almost to that point, like people don't want it to be like, okay, bring me a new experience, but don't make it too gimmicky. It's just that balance, I feel.
Yeah, that's the trouble with game design. Also, notice that I went last because I am nice. That's why I'm the host. So with, you know, game design, there's always the risk of, you know, gimmicky, which is part of the reason why a lot of people weren't sure about 1-2 Switch when it came out, because it just felt like the oddest thing ever, especially with like the udder game. Oh, you could feel yourself squeezing the udder. Do I really need to feel this? I mean, I get that. I mean, it will enjoy it. So, I mean, I guess that just shows his type. But I don't know if I would enjoy it much as he does. I don't know. But it is tricky, especially since the HD Rumble is only in one Joy-Con. They even note that. It's in, like, the left one, I think. But even if it was in both, which it might be, I don't remember. It's been too long. That's still, like, a danger in, you know, can you make it feel relevant in multiple games? Because that was, like Will said, the problem with the Wii is that, you know, you had the motion controls, but how do you use it in every game? So that is a struggle, but I still think that there's ways you could use it per se, like let's use Zelda as an example. Imagine you have a boss that's like a shadow runner, like it can hide in the shadows and you don't really know where it's looking, and you like the HD Rumble vibrates a certain way depending on its distance to you, and then you have to do like a quick time event and the HD Rumble is a way to show you that it's going to come. That could work. How would it work in practice? I honestly don't know. And I mean, it's all about, you know, like imagine that in a horror game where like it just starts vibrating randomly and you don't know why, and then all of a sudden like a ghost or a demon or whatever is about to get you, and the vibration's going off the charts. You know, that would be frightening enough, because the first time you're expecting it, or you know, you're not expecting it, and then the second time you're like waiting for it, and that's dread. So that could work in certain cases. It's just Nintendo's got the creative potential to make it work. It's just the question of how will they make it feel special from game to game while also not overusing, like Will said, because if you use it too much, then it's just a gimmick, which is what happened with the Wii by the end of its life. So I don't know, but they were clearly wanting to do stuff with this, You know, like they wanted this to make, you know, the next Wiimote, but they didn't for one reason or another, and I'm really curious why they didn't.
Yeah, those are great examples. I would love to see a horror game built from the ground up using the Itchy Rumble like that. Ultimately, Nintendo's only made a handful of games that maximize their potential in that way. Like Super Mario Party is another one that I didn't think of right away that does Joy-Cons well. And I think, as much as I love the old school games, I do think that actually, like, those minor actions that you'll do to perform the mini games in the game do make it that much more engaging and entertaining. It's going to be interesting for me to see how Nintendo kind of goes forward in that way. Maybe, you know, they've struck a better balance than I'm giving them credit for, because I don't really want everything to be turned into like some of the games on Wii, where I don't really need the flick of the wrist to make Mario do like a spin, even though that did work fairly well. That might not be the greatest. I don't need to shake the Wii remote to make Donkey Kong roll. I'd rather just press the button and have him roll. From a development standpoint, I kind of would like to see Nintendo branch out and take more chances like they did with ARMS and kind of use all that technology in these controllers for them, because they pack them in. I mean, they're expensive controllers. They have good tech outside of the obvious issues with Joy-Con drift and the fact
which I'm suffering heavily right now. It sucks.
It finally struck. That's, yeah.
So it took 3.5 years, but yeah, now I could barely play Fire Emblem without my right Joy-Con. Like, thinking that I'm leaning in and moving the map up to the top-down position. It's so annoying. But yeah, definitely need to fix that.
I remember the first time I started experiencing it, it was only happening on a TV mode. And then when in TV mode, and then it started happening in handheld, and I was like, oh no, this is what people are talking about. This is not great. It is frustrating that they haven't fixed that yet. And maybe, I doubt it, but maybe that's part of why they kind of haven't taken so many chances like they did with ARMS or Ring Fit, just because they know these games are unplayable if your controllers aren't working like that. Yeah. And the Pro Controller has motion capabilities as well, so I guess it doesn't even necessarily need to come from the games itself or themselves.
Right.
Well, at this point in time, I think we're a little more occupied with, you know, what games they're going to be making more than how the Joy-Cons are going to be used. But once they get back into the swing of things, I would like them to at least try and do something. Because, I mean, it's not like the vitality sensor where it was just like, what the frick is this thing?
Right,
and then
it
disappeared forever into the ocean of Nintendo ideas. But we know that the HD Rumble works. Like, that's the thing. 1-2-Switch and ARMS and Ring Fit Adventure are perfect examples of this. We know it works. It's just they're not using it a lot. So that's just a very curious thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a difficult, you know, you don't want people to hear a flashback. So at the end of that, I just think everybody was done with motion controls, period. But yeah, there's definitely room to explore, and I'd like to see them do that. Maybe in Metroid Prime 3, they could do some of that horror element that you mixed in.
Four.
I meant four. That would be a pretty cool idea if, like, you know, a Metroid sneak behind you, and all of a sudden you start feeling it. And if it's like sucking on your head, if the rumble's going crazy, I do think that would really enhance the experience there.
Right. Yeah. I definitely agree regarding to, like, because I'm getting flashbacks regarding to how Ubisoft actually did with Zombie U, because, like, utilized that thing very well, which is, like, very surprising. It actually won the top hits for the Wii U library. So I can only imagine, like, how if any developer can utilize in similar ways of, like, I don't know, like, with the hard sensor, like, how would that work? I mean, who knows? Do you have to keep your finger on that thing the whole time? Something similar to, like, I don't know, like, Until Dawn in some aspects, I guess. But I definitely look forward to, like, how developers, as we go into the new generation of game consoles and gaming, like, how they can continue to develop, especially, like, in terms of horror, puzzles, or whatever genres that these developers have planned of, like, can utilize the Joy-Cons in that matches their vision. So I definitely look forward to how developers will utilize the Joy-Cons. So here's hoping. I look forward to it.
And if you have any ideas of how they can be used, feel free to let us know. And so with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler, poll question or not?
We did not have a poll question last week, and I don't really think there was one this week. Nintendo's really not giving us a lot to work with.
Yeah, definitely not. All right, so let us know what you have been thinking about in terms of Paper Mario. Did you beat the Origami King, and what do you think about the deal with the NPCs? Are you excited for G4, and don't you agree that I'd be a great host? Because I am the host here, and I would be a great host there. It's just natural. Are you like Will and want Persona 5 Scramble to come to the West? And if you do, why do you hate us so much? What about Splinter Cell? Are you one of the people who definitely want that franchise to return? What do you think about the Nintendo leaks, and what was your favorite one of the bunch? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Atelius Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Tyler. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. You've made it to the end of the level because I am the host, so raise the flag.